Vandeham Sri Guru Shriyatav Parikamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavans Chashi Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shivishaka Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Today is a very happy day. Every day in Krishna consciousness is a very happy day because Krishna is happy. We're also happy by nature, not our materially conditioned nature. But our original nature is to be happy in Krishna's service. This material world is unhappy, but however miserable this world may be, or however much we experience the miseries, we can always be happy by remembering Krishna. Shri Jayadeva Kaveridam Uditam Udaram Shrinu Sukhadam Shubhadam Bhavasaram Keshavadrita Dasha Vidharupa Jai Jagadisha Hare. We just sung that in this miserable material world, it's not directly stated, but the Bhavasaram, the essence of this world is temporality. Coming into being, which means, again, there will be destruction. So in this material world, we can always be happy and in an auspicious position by remembering the pastimes of Krishna in his various forms, especially Jayadev, the author of this Dashavata Stotram. He says that by hearing this, we can be happy. By remembering these 10 forms of the Lord. Today is the celebration of the appearance day of Vamanadeva, who practically, as with many of the forms of the Lord, he comes to this world and declares his glory by doing so. He shows that he's the Supreme Lord by covering the whole universe with 2 footsteps. But even more than illuminating his own greatness, he illuminates the greatness of his devotees. We see Nrisimha with Prahlad, with Dhruva, the Supreme Lord with Dhruva. Bali Maharaj, he exemplifies the Ashlishava Padaritam Pinashtumam Adarshanan Marmahatam Karotu. He's whatever is done to him, he simply accepts. If Krishna wants, then I'm ready to submit, even at the expense of losing everything, literally everything. Everything that he had. For a Kshatriya to lose everything is not so bad, but to lose his reputation is the worst thing. Sambhavitasya cha kirtir marana dati richate, as Krishna told Arjuna. For one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So the Kshatriyas, that's the Kshatriya code. You win the fight or die, that's all. So, Bali Maharaj, he lost everything. He was willing even to go against his guru. By his guru's help, he had gained lordship over the whole universe, actually, because he was already in charge of the lower planets as the king of the demons. Then he conquered the higher planets. But there came a point where he said, no, I'm not going to I can't follow you. I follow you. I've followed you everywhere, but no further. When it comes to refusing Vishnu, even if it's not Vishnu or not Vishnu, I gave my word. So he lost everything and became, it means he had nothing. Bali Maharaj was left with nothing. So for one who has owned everything to be tricked by just some ruse, to be tricked into losing everything, it could be a cause of great derision among both the demigods and the demons, but he was willing to accept everything for the sake of maintaining his word and for the sake of pleasing Vishnu. He was a great devotee. It wasn't just that he was doing this to be an honest person to keep his word, but he was a great devotee by the grace of Prahlad Maharaj, who was very happy that he was a great devotee, because Bali Maharaj's father, Virochana, was not a devotee at all. He was, even though he was the son of Prahlad, but he was more in the grandfather's mode. He was a full-fledged demon, not just in name. Prahlad is a demon in name. Prahladas, what is that? Prahladas daityanam chasmi. He, among the demons, Krishna says, I am Prahlad, but not just in name, but he was actually a full-fledged demon. Honorable person, maybe, in some ways, because he gave his word to Indra, that Indra came disguised as a brahmana and said, well, can you give me anything? Anything? Yeah, well, whatever you want. So, okay, give me your head. So, all right, he gave his head, and he was dead. That was the end. That was the end of the Virochana threat. But Bali Maharaj, Prahlad preached to him, and he was, so Bali was leading a double life. He was, as the king of the demons, he was doing his prescribed varnashram duty of leading the demons to war against the demigods, but he was a closet Krishna. And when he had to choose openly between surrendering to Krishna or surrendering to his guru, then he chose Krishna, Vamana. So Bali, he is the very emblem of Atma Nivedanam, of giving yourself. Not just the self. I'll give myself, but I'll... Okay, I surrender myself, but I'm keeping for me my car, my house, my wife, my children, and my reputation. But Atma Nivedanam means to give everything. And the word Bali, it means a sacrificial animal, or one who is just given, with giving the life, that the life is taken for the sake of sacrifice. So even today, that's called balidan, when an animal is sacrificed. Of course, it doesn't have to be an animal. It could be anything, but it's usually associated with a sacrificial animal. A Bali is the very personification of complete surrender to Krishna. So remembering the pastimes of Vamana Dev, we can also remember Bali Maharaj, as we, in the process of performing devotional service, if it's actually devotional service, then there has to be Atma Nivedanam, giving oneself fully to Krishna. If we hold back, then it's not full, it's not complete. There will be many tests. Srila Prabhupada sometimes said Krishna consciousness is easy, and sometimes he said it's difficult. Seems like a contradiction. Well, maybe. there are contradictions. It's easy to perform. It's easy to open the mouth and say Hare Krishna. It can be very difficult for people who are very demoniac by nature. So in that way, it can be easy to chant Hare Krishna, it can be very difficult. It can be easy to for those who are not demoniac, it's easy to chant Hare Krishna. But it might be difficult to really mean it. Oh Krishna, oh energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. What are the implications of that? Krishna is Hari, he takes everything away. So we may like to serve Krishna on our own terms and conditions. But to actually serve Krishna, he sets the terms and conditions, as Vamana did with Bali Maharaj. The terms and conditions are, you have no freedom, nothing. You simply have to submit and you'll be punished. You'll be vilified. You'll be mocked. You won't get anything. There was no sign from Balima. Later, of course, Vamanadeva gave himself fully. Vamana gave himself to Bali, because Bali gave himself to Vamana. Then Vamana came and acted as the watchman, the bouncer. Do you use that word in America? Bouncer? Yeah? The bouncer of at the door of Bali Maharaj's court. You might say, anyone comes, they see a... Usually you expect a big, strong guy to be a bouncer, and his little... You might trip over him. You might, some big kshatriya might trip over him. He's so small. That's what happened. Ravana came. He wanted to conquer over Bali Maharaj. And Vamana said, no, you can't go in. And Ravana didn't even look at him. Who's this? It's just, he might have just picked him up and popped him in his mouth, being a man-eater. Well, but all of a sudden Ravana felt a kick in his backside and he was flying through the universe. He didn't know that those little feet had already expanded across the whole universe. He thought it's just a little boy. So Vamana gave himself in reciprocation to Bali. But at the time there was no sign, there wasn't any prior notice, there was no contract that, okay, now Vamana, now I'm coming and you're, like if in a drama, if you do a drama now, then you know what's going to happen. But there was no such idea at the time that Bali was just performing sacrifices, that's all. He just started and naturally, brahmanas will come because at such a public sacrifice, the king is supposed to give profusely in charity. So it's a time for brahmanas to come. Vamana was the first to come. He got there first. He was faster moving than the other brahmanas. Even though he was very short, but he could move faster. What's that verse in the Isha Upanishad? Although he's fixed in one place, he moves faster than the mind. What is it? Anejad? I never learned it, actually. He was so short that from a distance, because he's holding an umbrella. Umbrella, you may have seen, the old style, before they had these, what do you call that, portable umbrella? It looks like a stick and then you flip it up, but made from bamboo, it's fixed in that shape, so it looks like a, what does it look like? Like a basket, something like that. So he was so short, he was holding his umbrella to protect from the sun. And from a distance, it just looked like there was a basket moving, because he was so short. So anyway, he was the first to get there, because maybe the idea is that he can ask for the best gifts, being the first one there. He'll be honored the most. So it came as a big surprise when he only asked for 3 steps of land, measured by his own footprints, and he's very short. If it could have been 3 steps of land by Bali Maharaj's footprints, it would have been bigger. But it's just insignificant. You may wonder why would anyone ask for such a thing? And Bali Maharaj, he didn't want to give that, because he said, it'll be embarrassing for me, because it won't be enough for you. But having come to me for charity, anyone who comes to me for charity, they should never have to go to anyone else. It'll be embarrassing. You'll take 3 steps and then, because you're not supposed to go back to the same person and ask again and again. So it'll be embarrassing. So he didn't want to do this. And he thought, hey, it's just some foolish child. He said, you can take a whole planetary system. What do you want? I can give you a whole planetary system, because he's in charge of the whole universe. But Vamandev spoke very high philosophy. So even though he'd come for begging, he said, yes, but you see, we're brahmanas, so we don't take more than we need, and we should just be satisfied with the minimum that we require. See, if you want to give me more, you want to give me more, then you excite my greed, then I'll ask for something. If you want to give me a kingdom, then I'll want another kingdom. If you want to give me a planetary system, I'll want another planetary system. If you take more than you need, then your desires increase. So it's better. Just, I'll take the minimum. So, okay. But even the Shukracharya didn't want to give that. He said, no, watch out. He predicted in advance what would happen. So Vamana, having spoken all this about just taking the minimum that you need, he proceeded to take the whole universe. And in this way, cheated Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj accepted that. All right, whatever he wants to do. It's a very good lesson for devotees, because despite all our plans, we can't control the world. We don't know what's going to happen to us. So our motto is to try our best to serve Krishna. And the result, we don't know what will happen, but we take it as Krishna's mercy. If we're actually trying our best to serve Krishna, then whatever happens, we take that's Krishna's mercy. He may, aslishava padaratam pinashtumam. He may embrace me, or crush me under his feet, or make me brokenhearted by not even showing himself to me. But anyway, he's my Lord. This is the attitude of Atmanivedan. And actually one becomes very happy by doing this. As long as one is making one's own plans, then one always feels frustrated and in anxiety. But Atmanivedan tuapade kari hoinu paramashuki dukha dure gelo chinta na rahilo Chodike Ananda Deki, Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, that having Atmanivedan, having offered myself or given myself fully to you, at your lotus feet. He's praying to Krishna. I've become fully happy. Huino paramashuki. All my distress has gone far away. Oh, my anxiety has ceased to exist. And in all directions, I simply see happiness. So it's counterintuitive. We think that, well, if I could just get everything under my control, then I can organize everything so I'll be happy. That's what everyone in this mature world is doing, down to the dung beetles. They get a piece of dung and roll it up. They're trying to organize. If I can just get this piece of dung into a nice ball, then everything will be wonderful. People are coming from Iraq and Syria, coming to Europe and thinking, yes, if we just get to Europe, then everything will be wonderful. It's an illusion. They're living in a dream. Of course, you may say it's better to live in a dream than to live in a nightmare. But what they don't understand is that it's a nightmare everywhere. So Bhagavatam is for waking us up. Utishta, Jagrata, Prapya, Varanga, Nibodhata. That's the Bhagavatam. Is the wake up, the Upanishads say. Get up, wake up. But they don't make it so, they're not so straightforward and so clear as to what waking up means. The Bhagavatam does that. Which that's a good lead-in to talk about Jiva Goswami. Because the appearance of Vamana Dev today and disappearance of Jiva Goswami Prabhu, who his main contribution and essential contribution, without which the Gaudiya Sampradaya would not be what it is, could not be what it is, are his sandarbhas, which are all based on the Bhagavatam. Yeah, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur also coming up, his appearance day. So yesterday I read part of an article by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, written in the 19th century in his Sajjana Toshani magazine, which was titled Sri Jiva Goswami Prabhu, just in the course of my wanderings through my so many things I have collected. So I was looking up something else, and I came across this article, and with the title, after the word Prabhu came an asterisk, which led to a large footnote, which was almost a page long, in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur justified using the word Prabhu in relation to Jiva Goswami, because certain people, he said, which would mean what we call traditional Vaishnavas, that means from the caste Goswami and Babaji lines, they say that the word Prabhu should only be for Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Prabhu. Bhaktivinoda Thakur didn't quote this, but this is probably based on the verse in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Ek Mahaprabhu or Prabhu Dui Jan. Dui Prabhu Sheve Mahaprabhu Charan. There's one Mahaprabhu, which means Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and two Prabhus, who are Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Prabhu. So they say this should only be used for This word Prabhu should only be used for Advaita and Nityananda. Although the word Prabhu is generally used in Bengali Chaitanya Charitamrita much more than Mahaprabhu to refer to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And also we find the word Prabhu being used in Srimad Bhagavatam for Shukadev several times addresses his own disciple Parikshit as Prabhu, and Narad Muni also addresses various of his disciples, such as Vyas, Dhruva, Prachina Barhi, as Prabhu. So, Jiva Goswami, that just gave me some insight that, because I hadn't seen this article before, I hadn't read it before, that, going a little ahead to Bhaktivinoda Thakur here, generally it's thought that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was less polemic than Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's not very difficult to be less polemic and less pugnacious. I hope you all know what these words mean. Polemic means getting into debates and controversies, and pugnacious literally means punching people out. So, but actually the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that he said that whatever I'm doing, it's just I'm just broadcasting what Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wasn't just neutral in these matters. All the points that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took it, certainly Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took it up with a high degree of aggression. I discussed that in this Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, that if he had not done, then everything that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur hadn't been so aggressive, then everything that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had taught would have been lost. And that already happened, that he, all the progress he'd made had been commandeered by the bogus so-called Vaishnavas. Jiva Goswami, he gave philosophical shape to the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Whenever I use this word philosophical, I like to qualify it, because what's understood as philosophy in the Western world basically means different people's opinions. But, well, it's more than opinion. It's a thesis, different philosophies. Srila Prabhupada would ask people, what is your philosophy? Probably most of the people he asked that, they never even thought, what is their philosophy? But everyone has a philosophy. Even if someone says, I have no philosophy, I just live my life as it is. That's also a philosophy or a worldview. Because everyone lives with a worldview. Shraddhamayo yang purusha yo yat shraddhasa eva saha. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, everyone has a kind of faith, which in this context I understand to mean an outlook. So even if people say, well, I don't believe in anything, of course then you can ask them, do you believe what you just said? it's a self-negating negative. But that's also based on, they don't know it, but there are what we might call professional philosophers who have gone to much intellectual work to justify not believing in anything. Going a little off on a tangent now. We're following Jiva Goswami, and others are influenced philosophically by people like John Lennon, who probably most of you are old enough to have heard of, but I asked some devotees who were distributing books in Ireland a few weeks ago. They were distributing Chant and Be Happy. I said, do the young people have actually heard of the Beatles, John Lennon and George Harrison? He said, well, he said, most of them have heard of them. They don't really know much about them. They're not, it's not something that the young kids get excited about, which just goes to show the temporality that they were so big. As John Lennon said, now we're more popular than the Beatles, which was probably, more popular than Jesus, which caused an uproar in America, not in England, where he said it. But it was probably true at the time, but now forgotten. That's the nature, especially of the modern world. Everything's forgotten very quickly. There was a cartoon? What are you talking about cartoons for? It was in Back to Godhead magazine some more than 20 years ago about the Olympics. Some Olympics were going on somewhere. So it was a three-part cartoon. There's the person getting the medal, gold medal, and he's beaming like this. And number two cartoon shows and all people surrounding him and cheering him. And number two shows that the euphoria has died down a bit. Most of the people have left. And number three, he's looking around. No one's there. No one cares for him anymore. So, yeah, John Lennon. I listened to a song of his. I came across it while wandering through the folio, the Veda base of... A devotee was telling Srila Prabhupada about this song that John Lennon had made, where he says, I don't believe in anything. And so I looked it up, because I several times quoted that song, because I remember hearing it before I knew anything about Hare Krishna, and I thought, this guy's an idiot. At that time, I thought he's... So the words are quite easy to remember. He says... God is just a concept by which we measure our pain. That's how he opened it. What on earth it means, I don't know, but he thinks it's something very intellectual. Then he goes on, I don't believe in I Ching, I don't believe in Tarot, I don't believe in Hitler, I don't believe in Kennedy, I don't believe in Zimmerman, which is the name of Bob Dylan. He changed his name from Robert Zimmerman to Bob Dylan. I don't believe in the Beatles, I don't believe in Buddha, I don't believe in mantra, I don't believe in Krishna, I don't believe in Gita. And then you come to the punchline. And he sings it with such feeling as if it must be true because he's saying it. I just believe in me. Yoko and me, that's reality. And he found reality, and reality hit him in the form of a bullet. But I thought about that. He says, I don't believe the Gita. But the Gita is not a matter of belief. You may, dear John, wherever you're gone, janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha, as is stated in Bhagavad Gita, the misery of birth, death, and old age and disease, is not a matter of belief. You believe it or not, it's a fact. So the great philosopher of the modern age. But yeah, he influenced so many people. People take their philosophy from rock stars or whatever. I don't even know what they're called nowadays. I think rock is an outmode. Huh? Pop stars. That's the overwhelming genre, is it? Pop. So our philosophy is coming from Krishna, coming from Vyasadeva, but specifically, well, you may say through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yes. But specifically, it was systemized and presented on the basis of Shastra by Srila Jiva Goswami, who began, was any propounder of any systematic philosophy must do, with epistemology, establishing, in Sanskrit we say, Praman, Pramanavicha, establishing what is our source of knowledge. Descartes, famously, the founder of modern philosophy, he's said to be started with cogito ergo sum. I have cognizance. I think. It's actually it's translated as I think, but it's not really I. The word think has more means, but just to be cognizant. I'm aware, you could say. I have consciousness. Therefore, I am. So that was his beginning. Jiva Goswami doesn't begin in the same way. The modern philosophy is bottom up. Start with what we know, and what we know can know for sure, and develop from there. And that's why philosophy, in the English word philosophy, means various kinds of speculations because of our inability to know. Our very limited ability to know by our mind and well, that's the whole, senses and mind. In modern philosophy, the empiric approach, we believe our senses, or the rational approach, we believe our mind. But both are insufficient. The Vedic approach is that knowledge exists independently of our senses and mind, and therefore we have to receive it. Knowledge is Veda. So Jiva Goswami starts with, as any Vedic philosopher must, with accepting the Vedas. It's the top-down approach rather than the bottom-up approach to acquiring knowledge. And he establishes Srimad Bhagavatam as the essence of all the Vedas, which Bhagavatam states itself, Sarva Veda Itihasanam Saram Saram Udaharitam. It is Vedyam Vastavam Atra Vastu. It is the same thing. It's saying in another way the same thing. It's the essence of all the Vedas, and it's most important in Kali Yuga. He establishes this in the beginning of his six essays. The first is establishing his source of knowledge. The Bhagavatam in Kali Yuga, although universally all the followers of the Vedas accept Shruti Praman, which means as the topmost evidence. Shruti means the four Vedas, especially the three Vedas, Rig, Sama, Yajur, and their immediate corollaries, which means the Brahmanas, the Aranyakas, the Sanghitas, and the some accept the Upanishads and the Upanishads. So, that is Shruti, and then everything else is considered Smriti, which means the Puranas and the Itihasas and the commentaries, the various commentaries by. The commentaries and the systems of philosophies which are given by the great philosophers. So we have the Vedanta Sutra given by Vyasadeva, Mimamsa Sutras, the Jaimini, Yoga Sutras, Patanjali. So they give a philosophical system, codified in, but that is not as authoritative as original Shruti. So, Jiva Goswami establishes that original Shruti is most authoritative, but it's not applicable in this Kali Yuga for various reasons. One reason is most of it's lost. It's not available in the world today. The paramparas are lost. Another reason is even what's there, people can't understand it because they're too foolish in this Kali Yoga to understand the purport. So he establishes that Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all Shastra. And it's especially applicable in Kali Yoga when people are Stri Shudra Dvijabandhu Nam Trayina Veda Gochara. People, mostly women or Shudras or supposed Brahmana Kshatriya Vaishyas, but they're only born in the families of twice born. They're not actually twice born in the real sense of the term. So they're not, these classes of people, they are not suitable for studying the Shruti. So actually for them the Mahabharata was compiled by Vyasadeva. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the, so he establishes that, and on the basis of that, he established in great detail. He quotes other shastras also, but mostly Bhagavatam. All the points that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also taught all these things, but he didn't put it in writing. He gave that work to, he taught all these points to, especially to Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and they were supposed to put it all in books, and then they entrusted the work of systematically codifying Gaudiya Darshan. Darshan is philosophy. They gave that work to Jiva Goswami, which he did in massive works, in which he, because Bhagavatam itself addresses all various philosophies that were extant at the time and establishes Krishna consciousness as supreme, Jaiva Dharma, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur called it, the dharma or the intrinsic activity or mode of life, proper mode of life for all jivas. So Jiva Goswami established this. Which put the Gaudiya Sampradaya on a very solid footing. Otherwise, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is what he came and gave, what he's most remembered for, or the impression that he gave to most, was that he was simply an ecstatic. It was all sentiment. And if it's all based on feelings only, then it can go off very easily. That's very much what happened in the history of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. That without reference to the philosophical understanding, people just wanted to accept the ecstasy without the hard work of Atma Nivedanam, of surrendering to Krishna. Last night I was discussing with a young lady who I've known since she was a small girl, whose family lineage is from Sri Vaishnav Sampradaya. We don't see such deviations in the Sri Sampradaya, in the Madhva Sampradaya, as we see in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Because one reason I personally analyze is because traditionally it's had a very philosophical background and a very rigid in the sense of what you have to do, rules and regulations. There are plenty of them. And that's what you do. There's not... And also a very strong sense of Acharya Upasana, of following the Acharya. So that if you meet a member of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya even today, they will introduce themselves, "I am a servant of Ramanuja." But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sampradaya, there are some pretty wild elements in there. One reason we can say is because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was wild. He was very strict in practicing sannyas. But he sometimes exhibited wild ecstasy because the highest level of spiritual life is beyond rules and regulations. It's pure sentiment. If we say pure sentiment, it sounds something denigrating, that it's not very good. But we're saying pure here, not in the sense of only sentiment, but it's the feelings for Krishna, unmixed with any personal motivation. And also pure sentiment in the sense that it's unmixed with any awe and reverence. Pure feeling for Krishna. So that is the highest. But another reason why our sampradaya may be somewhat wild is because of Nityananda Prabhu, who avadhut, beyond all regulations, and he acted in ways which would be considered very eccentric, to the extent that even in his personal presence, there were people who thought, well, okay, we accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but this Nityananda, it's just an embarrassment. There were devotees who thought like that. It's recorded in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. There was one brahmana in Navadvip. He came to Puri and he said that, "I have great faith in you, but I really have a hard time accepting Nityananda, because the way he behaves is just so..." Supposed to be a sannyasi, but he dresses in all these expensive ornaments, and he never can tell what he's going to do. And somebody's going around. So he goes and mixes with all low-class people. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, "No, you have to accept Nityananda is none different from me." So the philosophical basis, apart from which Jiva Goswami provided, and Gopal Bhatta Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they provided to some extent, they gave Hari Bhakti Vilas, but it's a big compendium of rules and regulations. But not in the way that in other sampradayas, just like in Madhva Sampradaya. Madhvacharya himself wrote the Sadachar Smriti, which explains everything a Madhva Brahmin has to do from morning till night, and it's very clear. But Hari Bhakti Vilas is not like that. It offers all kinds of directions, very big work. Now, Jiva Goswami, we say, well, it gives some respectability, just like Srila Prabhupada said about his books, that it gives us respectability. Well, that's true, but that's not the only reason. It's supposed to give an understanding, a worldview, in which we can operate as we attempt to progress from initial Shraddha to Prem. There's a process Rupa Goswami gave in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Adar Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. Ataha Bhajana Kriya Tato Narta Nivritti Syat Tato Nishta Ruchistata Ato What is that? Ata saktis tato bhava tata ata prema abhyudanchati sada kana mayang prema pradur bhave bhavet kramaha. Step by step, there's a progression from shraddha to prema. And what keeps us on the right path. First, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that all the Vedas, they teach Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojan. First of all, understanding who we are and what is our relationship with Brahman, which is the subject of Vedanta, is Brahman. What is our relationship? Then we come to Srimad Bhagavatam. Brahman is not something impersonal, and our aim is to emerge in the impersonal. Brahman is Advaya Gyan, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. That Bhagavan is Krishna, who is explained throughout the Bhagavatam, and his pastimes are given. He is Param Brahma, Purna Brahma. That verse is given by Shukadev describing Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Aho bhagyam, aho bhagyam, nanda rajok, nanda gopa rajokasam, yanmitram paramanandam, purna brahma sanatanam. He says, how fortunate are Nanda Gopa, Nanda Maharaj, and all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, because their friend and well-wisher is this supremely blissful Yanmitram Paramanandam, the supremely blissful, eternal, complete Brahman, which means Krishna. So the Vedas, they describe what is our relationship. The subject of the Vedanta is Brahman, Atato, Brahma Jignasa. So that Brahman, that is ultimately, that is Krishna. That Krishna, who is the supreme Brahman, is wandering in Vrindavan with no shoes on, eating. So the Brahma became surprised to see he's eating some village food with his left hand, and doesn't wear any shoes, and even his friends are eating with him. They'll eat something and say, oh, this tastes so nice, and give it to Krishna, their remnants, because they want him to share what they're tasting. So Brahma became bewildered, and all that the bhakti ras, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, anatojvala rasa, the topmost resplendent rasa of the sharing with Krishna at the level beyond thinking of him as the Supreme Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give that, to justify that, to give a basis in Shastra to that. Of course, the basis is there, but to illuminate that, Jiva Goswami describes Sambandha Abhideya. Sambandha, what is our relationship with the Supreme Lord? How to act in that relationship, and entering into that relationship, our prayojan. So Jiva Goswami gave this, and thus the Gaudiya Sampradaya had a basis. Even though the Sampradaya very much became degraded, not the actual Gaudiya Sampradaya never becomes degraded, but what was seen as the Gaudiya Sampradaya became degraded. But then Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others, they had a basis to go back to in the writings of as Srila Prabhupada said, even if everyone leaves, still, because my books are there, it can be picked up again. So it gives a clear understanding of what our sampradaya is, what our understanding is, what we're supposed to be doing. This is the contribution of the six Goswamis. Jiva Goswami gave this philosophical basis. Now, at the present time also, even though we have distributed so many books, and although our movement is actually a very philosophical movement, we don't... Where is there in the whole of Dallas or the whole of America or the whole of the world where people gather daily to discuss philosophy, maybe in a philosophy class in a university? They're not very popular classes. There are many churches or mosques where people go to hear sermons, but they don't speak philosophy. They have no idea. Maybe in the seminaries where the priests, the people are being trained as priests, there's just some discussion of philosophy. I must have attended hundreds of lectures in churches because my mother took me to church. I don't remember a single word that anyone said in any of them. Daily in the school, this Catholic school, there was some speech supposed to be something to do with Catholic religion. Don't remember anything. Don't remember anything. It didn't make any impression. It must be there in the subconscious, as Sigmund Freud would say, or Jung. But it didn't make any impact. It didn't create any interest. But Srila Prabhupada, as stated in the autumn, what's that? There's that allegorical chapter in the Bhagavatam, the description of autumn. So there's a description is there that when an acharya comes, he engages people in study of Shastra. So our movement is actually very philosophical. We have to act on that philosophy and live by that philosophy. Otherwise, we lose everything. If it only becomes feelings, then we lose everything. Because feelings are very, they're vapid, which means they're here, they're gone, they evaporate, they're gone, they don't last very long. They're always changing, and it's based on sankalpa vikalpa, I accept, I reject, based on my illusory understanding of what is good for me, what is good for my sense gratification. The philosophical basis is very much required. People in the world today, if they know anything about Hare Krishna, mostly, unfortunately, in the Western world, where people often ask me, as I'm dressed like this wherever I go, except in 3 days I'm flying off to some Muslim-dominated country, so I have to enter the country in clothing which would not excite so many questions as this clothing. It means regular kami dress. So I go dressed like this here and there, and people often ask, what is this? I say, have you heard of Hare Krishna? And unfortunately, most people say no. On a flight recently, I was flying from London to Belfast in Northern Ireland, I saw a young man was reading a book which was discussing about atheism, which is quite a big topic. Seems to have died down a bit, but there was, for some time, there was a lot of drum banging from this Richard Dawkins, and then here in America, Sam Harris, and Anglo-American Christopher Hitchens, who has gone to meet his maker, although he wouldn't believe it. The atheists, they're making a lot of noise. It's died down a bit, but I can imagine in Northern Ireland it's still a big issue because it's a very religious place. Almost everyone in Northern Ireland up to the present day still believes in God. So I saw him reading a book like this, and then I can't remember the title or what it was, so I asked him then, so which side of the debate are you on? And he said, well, I'm just trying to find out. But he said, well, you must have some inclination one way or the other. He said, yeah, I'm more inclined to accept theism. And he asked, what about you? Because being dressed like this, it's obviously religious, but it's not necessarily theistic, because Buddhism is brazenly atheistic, and many people think that we're Buddhists by seeing our dress. So I say, yeah, theist, clearly on this. But I said, it's whatever it is, from our perspective, it's not a question of belief anyway, because what we believe doesn't influence reality. Just for the sake of argument, if there's a God, then our disbelief in him doesn't make him not exist. And if there is no God, just saying it as a theoretical proposition, then our belief in him doesn't make him exist. So So anyway, but I asked him, then he said, what are you doing? I said, have you heard of Hare Krishna? No. There's, you know, a young, intelligent man who's interested in important questions, and he hasn't heard of us. So, and there's so many like that. So, those who have heard of us mostly think that we ring bells and we have flowers and love and peace, and it's some leftover from the 1960s hippies era. But actually, we have the best philosophy. Everyone will say that. But we have to demonstrate that, as Jiva Goswami did, in the present age. That is a great task for our movement, to present the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in a systematic way that first of all has to be done in writing, as Jiva Goswami did. And then after Jiva Goswami, all generations of Gaudiya Vaishnavas can tap into that for their own written presentations, which may not be as exhaustive as his, and for their speaking and teaching. Otherwise, what do the gurus teach? They have to teach what is received in parampara. So Jiva Goswami established our philosophical position. That's been developed, of course. And Vishwanath Chakravarti, that's another big discussion, which I won't get into. Vishwanath, actually. Anyway, I won't discuss this. No. Then Baladev Vidyabhushan, he also presented his commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Vedanta Sutras. And parampara goes on like that. It's not that everything's finished. Because Jiva Goswami systematized the philosophy, but it always has to be presented, and different points have to be emphasized and discussed, and in each generation. Now, we have Krishna consciousness in the West, and Jiva Goswami's philosophy rests on the axiom that Veda is knowledge, but that is not at all accepted in the West. The modern philosophy came out of rejection of revelation. So they don't even, of course, there's Catholic theology and Protestant theologies, and which are philosophical, but mainstream philosophy doesn't accept that as philosophy at all, because they accept as their axiom that revelation is can't be accepted as knowledge. When we begin with revelation. So we have a very important task. Someone has to do this, to first of all write a systematic presentation of Jiva Goswami's philosophy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. Darshan is the word, means manner of seeing. Madhvacharya's philosophy is not wrong. Ramanuja's philosophy is not wrong. It's right. What they've written is correct. But fullest vision is that given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Jiva Goswami, through the acharyas in parampara. So we need to present this in modern terms. You may think, well, it's not very important, but it is important. Just like I said, John Lennon. Why bring in John Lennon? What, you know? Well, because his ideas, they also arise out of skeptics. Empiricism. You may not even know the names of these philosophers, but they so many philosophers have been there. Even today, the champion of the atheist empiricists is David Hume, who was 350 something like that years ago, and it's, although people have attempted to defeat him, there are many who think that he's still, what he says is valid today, because the it's actually a fact. If you just accept oneself as the arbiter of knowledge, then you can't really know anything. And that's where we begin also, that you okay, then, but then knowledge exists. If I just take a little bit of a humble position and say that the knowledge, or accept that the knowledge is there, the fact that I can't ascertain anything without accepting at least some axioms, then instead of going to skepticism, it should rather lead us to finding out the actual source of knowledge. So it can be done. Christian philosophy is not a good substitute for atheistic skepticism. But Vedic knowledge is, because Ved means knowledge, we have to demonstrate that. It's a very important task of our movement. This will be the greatest service to Jiva Goswami. Now we may say, well, Prabhupada did it in his books. Yes, but not in a systematic way. Srila Prabhupada presented his books, commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam. This is a traditional system, a commentary on Shastra, which is, Shastra is generally not presented in a, as a systematic philosophy. Of course, Vedanta Sutras is there. That's not Shruti. That's written by Vyasadeva himself. The Shastras are like that, but they are meant not so much for reading as for explaining. The gurus explain that. They explain the Shastra. So it may not be, it traditionally is not given in a systematic way. We think in the modern age everything has to be very systematic. But that's not the Vedic system. It's given little bit here, little bit there, and the gurus also have to see the ability of the disciples to understand. The whole point is that Shastra is to be imparted through the gurus. But then the systematic background, the framework, that is there. All the in the Ramanuja and Madhva, they gave their Vedanta Sutra commentaries, and also which systematically discuss and explain various points. They also wrote specific works which outline their philosophical position, and their subsequent acharyas have done so also. So that's required. I mean, others will chant Hare Krishna and be happy, and that's very good, but someone has to present. Even if we present it up to the level that now you go to Jiva Goswami, but that has to be done, because if we simply say we accept Jiva Goswami as our authority, we accept Srimad Bhagavatam as our authority, then why? And how do we apply that practically in the modern world? So there is, on this day especially, we can consider that we have a lot of work to do. We may not be everyone. There's one Jiva Goswami. but that's important service. Hare Krishna. I'll finish now because we're over time. More later. Hare Krishna. Yeah, we'll finish this session here.